You're listening to the Full Picture Podcast, a podcast highlighting diversity in the hundreds of roles featured in the end credits you almost never stay for. I'm John Green.
And I'm Darby Barton.
This week is all about sound on set. Joining us today is location sound mixer and boom op, Antoinette Tomlinson, whose preferred gender pronouns are she, her, hers.
Antoinette shared with us about taking risks, starting a production company, and building a career as a woman of color.
This episode also features Brian D. Almeida, a fellow Full Sail Film School alumni and friend of the Full Picture Podcast. Antoinette, it's so great to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. The goal of this podcast is to tell diverse stories, but also to talk about roles in the film industry that I don't think get a lot of attention. You know, I listen to a lot of podcasts and people talk about, they bring on editors and cinematographers and directors and producers because those are the most well-known jobs. And I mean, as you know, there are 400 to 1,000 different jobs on a film set, and 95% of those don't get a lot of attention.
Nope.
So why don't you tell me a little bit just about how you got started in the sound world of film?
Okay, so short form, I was PAing. I did like two or three PA jobs, and on one of them, the DP we were just having a normal candid conversation, and then he was like, "Oh, you do sound." I was like, "Yeah, but I do post sound." He's like, "Oh, but you can do sound for my film." "No, I can't." "Yes, you can." So I ended up jumping into that. And then I was also second ACing for him at the time as well. And I was doing something, I think, for like Hot 97 Summer Jam. Yep. And I ended up seeing the mixer that was part of our crew, and I really loved his setup. So I was like, "Hey, like, you know," I was just chopping it up with him. And then he told me, he's like, "If you really want to do it, just do it. Buy a rig and just get out there and do it. That's the best way to learn and the best way to get out there." So that's exactly what I did. I bought my first rig, which was a Mix Pre 10. Super love it. And I just went out there and started doing gigs. I did like a couple for free, and then I started picking up on paid gigs. Yeah. And then how I really started getting deep into it was there was a job opening that I saw on Facebook for a New York Times shoot in Ottawa, which is where I'm from. Okay. And I was like, "Oh, I have to do that," because I always wanted to work with the New York Times. Yeah. And I always wanted to go back and work in my home city. Yeah. So I kind of patented my resume just a little bit, right? Like, I kind of souped myself up just a little bit more.
You
gotta
do that, yeah.
And I asked the same guy who gave me the advice on the shoot I was ACing. I asked him to borrow some equipment. I already had mine, but like there was a couple of things I still needed, like hops and stuff. He gave it to me. I never touched the hop, his 411s before, the electrosonic 411s before.
Okay, yeah.
And I was like, "Okay, I'm just going to wing it." I researched it enough. I was like, "Okay, this is going to work." And thankfully, it worked out, but I like totally bust my ass on that shoot. Thankfully, it went really well. And technically, my career just kind of took off from there.
Awesome. That's really cool. So what inspired you to get into sound design? Was this something that started for you when you were younger, or did it kind of happen while you were in college?
It more so happened while I was attending Full Sail. I knew that I liked films, but I also loved music, so I didn't know exactly how to combine the two. I just knew I was like really into it. And then when I took interactive audio and intro to sound design, I was completely hooked, and it was over. It was straight from there. Todd and Tom are the two guys that like really pushed it for me too.
That's the class where you do Unreal Engine work, right? Like it's kind of like Doom, and then you create gun sound effects and all that, right?
Yes.
I'm trying to think if those are, have they been the long time instructors there? I might have had them as well.
Tom, who works for EA now, or he used to work for EA, left, and now he's back at EA.
Oh, Tom Todia?
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
Him, and then there was Todd. I think his last name is Child something. Yeah, those two guys, Tom and Todd, those guys really helped pave the way for me to want to do sound design.
That's cool. Did they kind of, was it more of a direction, like helping direct you in that, or did they actually act as mentors to you in your work?
Todd, for sure. Mm-hmm. Especially when he realized I had a thing for things that go boom. He really helped me, develop that a lot. Tom was just somebody really great to talk to, full of information and very willing to give it out. I spent a lot of time with him after mm-hmm. school, especially with my projects and so forth. He was really great. But Todd, for sure, like, saw something and was like, yeah, I'm going to help you hone in on that right there.
That's cool.
I love big effects. Yeah, big sound effects are great.
So what, for this, up to this point in your career, what has been one of the biggest challenges that you've had to face?
You know, it's so funny because I love talking, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm not loud. And also, too, I feel like I've been told I'm too polite. So when it comes to, like, actually being forceful in what I need or in things like that, I found that to actually be kind of a challenge for me because I'm not loud like that. Like, I don't yell.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I kind of wait for people to, like, finish a conversation or whatever the case may be before I actually chime in. Mm-hmm. And I actually had an AD come to me. And he's actually now a good friend of mine. He looked at me. He was like, I really like you and I really want you to succeed, but I need you to be louder. And that scared the hell out of me when he said that. But I as time progressed, I understood what he meant. So finding my voice and not being afraid was actually one of the biggest hurdles for me.
Would you call yourself like an introvert, or would you call yourself, would you label yourself as that, as an introvert?
No, nobody that knows me would ever say she's an introvert. I'm an extrovert that wants to be an introvert.
So extroverted introvert?
I totally get that because I'm extremely extroverted in that, like, I have to be around people. Like, solitude drives me insane. But I'm also not very outgoing. Like, I don't just go up and start random conversations at a party. I'm just like, oh, I'm just chill being here with other people.
Yeah, pretty much. And, like, you know, I'll wait. Mm-hmm. And even to, like, you know, just, like, saying excuse me, like, and then chiming in. They're like, you can just interrupt me. Like, I know you have something to say about sound, so you can just totally interrupt me. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
It's like that saying, like, we have one mouth and two ears so that we can listen more.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Pretty much, yeah.
So is your goal to be a video game sound designer? Is that what you're trying to do right now?
No.
No.
I like video games. I would love to have, like, two on my roster just to, like, have it as something mm-hmm. I completed, but no.
No? Okay.
No.
What's your overall goal?
Yeah, what is your dream job or your dream project in the industry?
Oh, my gosh. Personally, to be honest with you, my dream really was to work for Skywalker Sounds.
I mean, my dream's to work at Lucasfilm, so.
Okay, you understand.
I'm with you, yes.
And they're, like, the hardest people to get a hold of.
They really are. I couldn't even get an internship there out of school.
Right?
It was
you have
so
to
tough.
Go through, like, some guild thing. It's so weird. I think the academy intern thing. But, that's a good question and a hard one. Because I'm just so focused on pushing Invictus right now. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, having it deal with bigger blockbuster budget films right now. I guess mm-hmm. that would be it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about Invictus for our listeners just talk about this project a bit. Yeah.
So Invictus Sound Factory is a location sound and post-production sound studio. We obviously focus in on providing location sound audio, mixers, equipment. We also mm-hmm. do rentals. And post side, we specialize in sound design, dialogue editing, and we're now going to be jumping into a new venture of offering scores and composition.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that should be interesting.
So how did Invictus start? What was the process for you around this? Because did you found Invictus, I assume?
I did.
Tell me a little bit about that, because I think it's a lot of people that come out of film school try starting their own production companies or their own production services, and it can be very challenging. So tell us a little bit about just getting Invictus started and what some of the hurdles that you've had to overcome are.
So Invictus really came up from the fact of like how hard I saw it was for people to get internships, even for me, mm-hmm. when I left school, and this is not to like boast or brag, but it's just to like paint a bigger picture here. I left Full Sail with a job offer at CNN, right?
Wow.
That I ultimately did not take. But after that, I kind of regretted it because I realized, oh, shoot, it's really hard to get an internship out here, much less like some type of PA job in mm-hmm. one of the post house. I finally got one, but then I was hoping it would turn into an actual position. It didn't. And I just started freelancing and just going on Craigslist at the time and looking for free stuff just to build up my portfolio.
Yeah.
And from there, I created Invictus because I wanted it to create opportunities for other people just like myself, who it was hard for them to get an internship. I didn't want it to be a place where you can't get into. I want it to be accessible for you to learn, grow, and evolve.
Yeah.
As well as now when I jumped into Location Sound, I wanted to do the exact same thing, right? Just mm-hmm. be a place for people to come and learn and evolve in their career. So awesome. I wanted also to still be able to dabble in both of the worlds because mm-hmm. it was getting kind of hard doing that by myself.
Yeah.
So Invictus was a way for me to stay involved in both.
That's cool. So I assume you're primarily based out of New York then?
No. Ooh. So because I split my time between Canada and New York, and just all over. Yeah, so
that's cool.
We are a Canadian-based company just operating also in New York.
Okay, cool. So what part of Canada?
Ottawa, Ontario. Okay. Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So how often are you traveling back and forth from Canada to New York?
A lot. Well, post-pandemic, a lot, you know.
Yeah.
I was just there June for a whole month shooting a show, and then I came back. Yeah.
So how has COVID affected your workflow?
Oh gosh. It actually got extremely busy at first when mm-hmm. it first started, like in March. Believe it or not, I was taking little jobs here and there because some people were still trying to work under the radar.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I could just capitalize on this opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, I tried to stay safe as possible. I was taking a gamble. So I was working here and there. But I would say after April, things picked up very quickly. And shows were trying to wrap this, like, do quick turnarounds and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it got super busy and I have not stopped. So to be honest with you, COVID, even though we had some downtime, it really has not stopped much. Yeah. It actually gave me more, which is good.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
How much did you have to adapt your process on set because of COVID, though? Like, how much did that affect it?
So by the time we were still miking people with lavs. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we did come up with new techniques on how to get lavs on them, like learning how to... It tested my teaching skills, is what I would say.
Yeah.
To learn how to direct people on how to mic themselves. That was not my strong suit.
Yeah.
But I started to learn how to do that, and they started getting the process. So there's some people out there who are pros now. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Also, too, you know, just learning different techniques. Like for the show I was on in Canada, we actually had the lavs on chains, right? So they all wore these chains that were rigged with a lav.
Interesting.
And a little fuzzy for wind protection.
Yeah.
And then we would have these clip-on packs where the transmitter would go.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the wire would go under their shirt. And that's how we mic them every day.
Interesting. And then, so if it's connected to the chain, how do you prevent like clothing rustle?
You go and fix. You try, because it's reality too, right? It's a reality competition show. Uh-huh. So you can't keep rolling in. So you try to fix it as much as possible. But we realized that if we kind of curled it in a little bit, mm-hmm. and because it had like the Rycote furry on it, it kind of could help with the rustle.
Okay.
If we positioned it a certain way.
Yeah.
So majority of the time it would work out. And like mm-hmm. we obviously had people taking off their chains and so forth like that.
Yeah.
If they had something. But yeah, we would just run in really quickly. We had six or eight cameras working against us. But we would just run in, fix it really quickly, and hope that it worked.
Thanks for listening to the Full Picture Podcast. We wanted to quickly share how you can support what Full Picture Podcast is doing to highlight diversity in the film industry. We know you hear this all the time, but it really is true that leaving a review helps other people find our podcast.
So if you enjoy the show, please leave us a quick review and share the podcast with one person you know.
You can also support us by contributing to our Patreon so we can keep creating impactful content. Now, back to the show.
What was the most difficult miking scenario you've encountered? Like, because I've like had times where, you know, like the actor's nude or like down to the point where it's like, how do I stick a lav onto this person, like, without, you know, the talent, without the viewers seeing it? Like, have you experienced a scenario like that?
Yes, and ultimately it comes down to me saying, you know what, screw it, I'm booming it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and it sucks sometimes. Like, there was one person in particular who wore an extremely difficult wardrobe that was loud as hell no matter where I put it. Even my boom was picking it up. So I just said, you know what, and she told me where to mic her. I couldn't mic her anywhere else. She told me where to mic her.
Oh, no.
So I was like, okay, no. Yeah, no, I'm scraping this. I don't even care about my lab anymore. I'm going straight for the boom. Me and the director had a conversation, and that's where it was. Another time, I'm just thinking of, like, a further miking situation.
How do you typically deal with that? Like, when talent is specifically telling you, hey, mic me here, and you know for a fact, like, as a professional, like, well, I know that it's probably better over here. Like, how do you deal with that?
I finesse it. You know, now you have to start babying them, like, really pleading with them and find some type of common ground. Like, I've really negotiated with a lot of people. It's so funny because the people I really negotiate with are music artists. Everybody else seems to be okay. They understand the process, but it's usually
music artists. Difficult.
Yes. And it's why?
But is it because they're prima donnas?
I think so. So I have to negotiate with them. And then sometimes it works out. One person in particular, it never did. And I'm okay with that. It's like, okay.
That's funny. My boss, he does not like being loved. I work at Steven Slate Audio.
Oh, nice.
And he doesn't like being loved. So I typically like boom it or try and find another way of miking.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I want to tell you a short story, and then I've got a question about this. So I recently worked on a short film with just a very small crew of people. Kind of everyone's doing two or three jobs. So we didn't have a costume designer or wardrobe for this project. So the director tells the actor, just show up with whatever you have, right? That's kind of like this. So we get this actress that shows up, and she's wearing an extremely low cut dress. And we're trying to figure out, like, where do we love her? Like, have you ever dealt with a situation where wardrobe hindered your ability to mic somebody?
Oh, all the time. All the time. But I would say, you know, that's where trial and error comes in. Like, if I have time to really test certain things out, I'm going to try everything in my arsenal to get it done. If I can't, then, you know, that's a conversation I need to have with either wardrobe or we're just booming it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I mean, you're going to be the one held accountable, and you want to make sure that you do the best that you can in that scenario.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's one of those situations where I'm like, I've never dealt with this, and I have no idea what to do. So we kind of winged it and ended up finding something that worked, but it took us a while.
I will say having different labs also, like different brands and stuff like that, helps a lot. Like recently I got some DPA 6060s. They're super tiny, really cute. Have saved my ass multiple times as of recently with wardrobe because like something like a COS 11 would show, but ultimately I was able to get that DPA super close and it not show because it's so tiny, and it took less work for me to rig it. It was beautiful.
That's
it
cool.
Absolutely beautiful. Yeah.
That's cool. All right. I'm going to pivot a little bit. Cause I want to talk about your experience as a woman in the industry and as a person of color. So what challenges have you faced related to being a woman in the film industry?
I feel like being taken seriously, more or less. And also to have had somebody, a producer, actually tell me one day, he was like, you know, I was really hesitant. I wasn't going to hire you. Why? Wow. He was like, because you sounded way too nice over the phone. And so I didn't think you were going to be good at your job. I was like, well, damn. What do you think now? He's like, no, I love you. I'm just telling you.
Like, that's like, really interesting.
Yeah. You know,
it's, so. It is. It's pretty hard to find like genuinely nice people in the film industry sometimes.
It is, but we're out there, and just because we're out there and we're friendly and we're chatty doesn't mean that we're not good at our job, you know? Mm-hmm. Just like to be friendly.
So then what do you think it takes to succeed as a woman in the industry?
You have to work 10 times harder, you know? Mm-hmm. You always, like, it's a pressure game where you feel like you always have to be on your game. Even to, like, having conversations with other women, kind of feel intimidated to put your foot down unless you really have like that mark in the industry where you feel like you could advocate for yourself more and stand your ground a little bit. I find that to be a little bit of a challenge, hence the finding my voice thing.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, like I said, just the respect level. I've had this one wardrobe incident. Usually I'm really cool at wardrobe, but this one guy was like legit trying to push me around, and I'm thinking to myself, you would have never done this if I, like, I feel like just the way he was working with like other male counterparts around, you would have never did this if this mixer was a man, you know what I mean? So I felt some, like, I had to like push back, and I'm not a pushy person, but I felt at that point, in order for him to really get it, like, don't, like, literally try me.
Yeah,
I had to kind of be pushy back to get what I needed. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't want to work with me. And then also, too, I was had a boom with me one day, and he was a male. And it was so crazy because the producer would talk to him, literally ask him the exact same question he asked me, and I answered it, right? Yeah. And he would turn to him and look at him to, like, basically clarify and authorize what I just said. It's like, wait, he's my A2, right?
Yeah.
And so I felt like...
That's so disrespectful.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I was really taken back by that. And then this guy, once he realized how that dynamic was happening, it was almost like he was just kind of trying to take over the whole thing. And I'm like, wait, no. This is my setup. This is how we're going to do things. I mapped everything out this way. I'm okay with collaborating, but just...
Yeah.
It's a respect thing, you know? I can be respectful to you. Just be respectful back to me.
That's... Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so those are my encounters. Yeah.
That is highly unfortunate.
It is, but it is what it is. I don't really let it affect me. It affected me at the time, but, you know, going forward.
I think that's something that anyone working in the film industry can learn is that feedback or criticism from people, don't take anything personally. Because if you do, it's going to be really hard in the industry because people just talk crap all the time.
And there's a lot of drama.
And there's a lot of producers that just don't care about your feelings. It's just like, it's just whatever. It's just do your job. That's it.
Yep. Absolutely. I agree.
You know, so would you recommend for anyone kind of coming up in the sound world today, how important do you think is it for them to own their own gear, to have their own package?
Depending on what you want to do, I would say get a mentor, you know, like... Mm-hmm. I don't want to say, yes, go throw so much money into your own rig because it's expensive to build a proper basic rig. But, you know, there's good rental houses out there to build and, like, just get your hands on the equipment because generally you want to get your hands on the equipment, learn microphone placements, learn all those things, right? And just get a feel for things. But definitely reach out to mixers, see if they're looking for utility or boom ops and work your way through that way because that's also a good way to learn the equipment and get real hands-on experience.
Yeah.
If you really want to go the route of doing both your own and also working for another sound mixer, definitely don't bust your wallet doing it, but definitely there's some pretty good startup kits out there.
All right.
So I think it's subjective, I guess. I find myself now pivoting more to producing.
Yeah.
I still love the sound aspect of it from post to location work, but I also seem to be very intrigued in producing.
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest risk you've taken in your career and how has it paid off for you?
I would have to say investing in all of my equipment. Mm-hmm. I took some really big risks in the amount of money that I've dumped into them, not knowing if it was actually going to pan out, but thankfully it has.
Good.
I would also say, you know, what are some big risks? I think the biggest risk for me was when I took that New York Times job. Mm. Because I was not, in quote unquote, in their eyes, qualified, but I made myself seem like I was.
Yeah.
And thankfully that worked out, because if it didn't, shit. You know?
Yeah. It's pretty scary when you go through that process of kind of like just like fudging your resume just a little bit just to get in the door. And then, you know, you get that interview and you're like, yeah, totally. I have experience doing this. I can totally do that. In the back of your mind, you're like, I know I can do it, but I don't actually have the experience.
Internal screaming?
Pretty much.
And praying the whole damn day.
Yeah. Well, it's like when you graduate, you have to take an initial jump or risk to do something to get a job. And when you get the job, you know, you might be unsure of yourself, but you just have to study and do the research. And once you get to that level of comfortability, hopefully you make it through to the other side.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I agree. I mean, like I said earlier, when I graduated, you know, and not taking that CNN job, that was like a big, oh, shit moment for me, right? Mm-hmm. And then I ended up working at PSAV for a couple of months until I figured out what I wanted to do. And in that time, I was also doing some PA work here and there. And it was on one last feature that I PA'd on. You know, I was getting really good with the director and the second director, with the AD. And, you know, he was like, it's really bumming me out that you're actually leaving. You only been here for 2 weeks and you're leaving to go back to your job. He was like, I actually liked you and I trusted you. I gave you my credit card, damn it. And I was like, wow. Well, thanks. I mean, I feel like you would give your credit card to any other PA. They're not going to do anything stupid. But I mean, like, thanks for the trust that you wanted to put in me. And I thought about it even too, just because I was doing free sound work at the time, trying to get my hands on the equipment and learn it. I was like, okay, if I really want to do this and this is the direction I really want to go, I have to take that leap of faith, which I did. And I left my job and went full-blown into production. And thankfully, it worked out for me. It was a little rough at first, but yeah, it kicked up pretty quickly, thankfully. I mean, because that's one of the reasons I left LA, not gonna lie. I was like, yeah, I make way more being in New York and in Toronto.
Yeah.
And also to just like the direction I wanted to go into now is more narrative. Mm-hmm. So I do start to see, okay, maybe going back to LA would be the right choice since there are more narrative stuff in LA.
Yeah.
It's just also how to make it work for me, right? Like maybe offering, okay, if I do location sound, would you let me do post work on it? Or somehow like just something to work for you in a sense, maybe negotiating. Yeah. Maybe they don't want to bite it. Maybe they will.
I guess this is something we could chat about really quick. What's your negotiation process like? Like, how do you get the rate you want, like that you know you're worth? But when you started out earlier in your career, you know, you mentioned doing a couple jobs for free. When you first moved into those paid jobs, how hard was it for you to up your rate as you were going to get to where you wanted to be now?
Honestly, with the rate, when I brought my rate up, I also was also updating my rig. Mm-hmm. So I was adding Electro Labs to it. Mm-hmm. I was kind of upping my game a little bit. And at that point was just kind of winging it. I gave them the number and hopefully they went for it. And ultimately they did. I won't lie. There was a couple of jobs I went a little bit below the normal non-union rates.
Yeah.
But that's just because I wanted the credit. Because I knew, like, okay, if I had title under my credit, that also helped me a little bit.
Yeah.
So I took some hits along the way, but they were beneficial to me now having the credentials to back up why I'm charging this. I have the equipment, yeah. I have the skill, and I have the credentials now.
Yeah.
To back it up.
That makes sense.
That's generally what helped me get to my rate.
Awesome.
Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Yeah, thank you. It's been such a pleasure having you on. Thanks for listening to the Full Picture Podcast. We're so glad to have you journey with us as we hear from diverse industry professionals and paint a full picture of the film industry. You can find us on social media at Full Picture Podcast, and you can follow Antoinette at Fave Soundgirl, F-A-V Soundgirl, on Instagram. Don't forget to leave us a review, contribute to our Patreon for special bonuses, and share the podcast with one person. Tune in next week for more close-ups on diverse industry pros.